All right, welcome in. KSO Show on a Wednesday. Mason Voth, Drew Galloway here with you as we get ready for K-State basketball tonight. Woo, woo, woo. I'm sure everybody is thrilled about that and looking forward to what will be coming K-State and UCF's way tonight. The Knights are 4.5-point favorites at this point in time. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Coleman Hawkins not playing again this evening. I think that was a given, but everybody's favorite college basketball reporter, John Rothstein, felt the need to put that out there this morning. So that is out there. No worries. He's not just going to magically show up. He is in Orlando with the team. But, yeah, he will not be playing. So K-State will have to figure it out without Coleman Hawkins again tonight. But the main purpose of us being here today is I acknowledged it on Monday. I stupidly missed the six-month out point from the Aer Lingus College Football Classic on Sunday. We were busy. There was a basketball game going on, so I'll give myself a little bit of grace there. But so much is being made of this game. And then yesterday, I was telling you, Drew, you know, humble brag, I've reached an age where I subscribe to my local newspaper. So my evening routine when I'm putting my daughter to bed is I get my phone out, we play a little music on it to just kind of get her, you know, calm down or whatever. And while she's sitting there and getting ready to pass out, I'm scrolling through Wichita Eagle stories. Just, you know, some of it, do I care about the local dining scene? Not really. My wife and I have not gone out to eat in an actual restaurant in probably ever since we've known each other. But I like to just read up on things. I take in a lot of information. My wife's like, why are you always on your phone? It's like, well, I'm always learning. I always want to be learning. You know, I started watching the America's Nature documentary that Tom Hanks is narrating on NBC yesterday. Was fascinated by it. Learned a lot about cicadas and kind of their thing that goes on there. A bunch of different other animals and stuff. So I'm always learning. So I proudly subscribe to my local newspaper.
You're not beating the Scott Wildcat youngest boomer. He knows allegations.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I also. I don't know. This might be a boomer thing because he's so Instagram heavy instead of TikTok now. But Alec Bussey, RIP, not dead. He sends me a lot of posts that he sees on Instagram that are like definitely suggested posts, but he always finds them funny. So he sends them to me. And there was one today that was sent, and it was like basically a meme and a bunch of different like versions of it, making fun of like how grandparents probably sit at like their grandkids' baseball games and they're like, what is this turned into? So like the first one that was on it that made me laugh pretty good was grandpa watching Aiden go 0-for-4 in $100 pink batting gloves, and it's a picture of Clint Eastwood just looking disgusted. And I was like, yep, okay, I don't understand some of the stuff that's going on there. The next one, and the best part is all these names on here are like spelled in like a new trendy way. They're all just, I once had a rant on the game about how there are certain baby names now that I don't like because I think they're trying too hard. Society, you know, whatever. And it says, grandpa hearing Jackson say, check the drip, and waving around a purple sprinkled ice cream oven mitt. Also fantastic. The other one, grandpa hearing it's okay, baby, after Liam watched three meatballs down the pipe for a backwards K, which, by the way, Liam was the name that triggered me into that rant and frustration on the game. Was I'm just, you know, no offense to the Liams out there, especially if you're a Liam over the age of 25, you get grandfathered in, fine, whatever. Too many Liams these days. Okay. That folks, before you name a child, go to the Social Security website and look at the top baby names and go through there and just start doing some checking. You know, that my wife and I, every time we think of a name for a kid, it's like, okay, we got to see where this ranked last year. How's it trending? We have a boy name that we like, probably won't ever get to use it. I know everybody cry for me. But we, you know, it peaked. It had a little moment, but it dipped back down. So, you know, by the time I might finally have a son, I might get to use it and it'd be out of the trendy stage. But that's enough of that. We can get into the stuff that we're actually here for. But Kellis's story was essentially quoting stuff from the Aer Lingus College Football Classic people, and how it was laid out was the fact that The Aer Lingus College Football Classic is viewing this as probably going to be the biggest game that they've brought to Ireland. And the reason for that is, and this is what the quote from Brendan Meehan was, who's the commercial director of the game, said it's different from previous years because we have usually predominantly had only one university that traveled. Last year, 80% of the fans were for Florida State. The year before that, it was the same with Notre Dame. The year before, the same with Nebraska. This is the first year where it will be a 50-50 split with K-State on one side and Iowa State on the other. He did later go on to mention that Iowa State at the current point in time is just slightly outpacing K-State and how they're doing with ticket sales. So at this point, probably slightly more Iowa State fans there. I'm sure that'll excite people. But it makes sense that this would be the setup, and that should be exciting to hear that the people that are putting on the game view this as the biggest and the best one they've had.
Yeah, and it's not really surprising when you look at it. I mean, a lot of the history of this game has been one team has pretty high preseason expectations, and the other team is like projected to be terrible, which is really ironic when you look at the game iteration of this past year, where Florida State was actually the team with high expectations, and everybody thought Georgia Tech was going to be terrible, and it ended up being flipped, where Georgia Tech was pretty solid and Florida State was terrible. But it makes sense. It's going to be the first time that I think both teams are going to be ranked going into the Aer Lingus College Football Classic, and I think that that's a big deal in itself. And why you kind of look at the numbers of this game beforehand, and the Notre Dame game is kind of off in its other world because Notre Dame has fans everywhere. But you look at it as this could be at least the second highest rated Aer Lingus game that they've had, because I think that a lot of neutral observers will be really interested, because I imagine we keep going back and forth about what we think that the preseason poll will look like when the Big 12 media days kick off at the Star, not Dallas or Arlington. So you look at that, and we think that both K-State and Iowa State are probably being like that second or third. Maybe one of them ends up being in first, maybe not. But it's a game that really determines the Big 12 race, like right out of the gate. And I think that that'll get a lot of neutral observers into it, because both teams will also probably have a number by them. So I think that it makes total sense from what the Aer Lingus College Football Classic people have said going into the game. And we'll kind of get into this, but the way that ticket sales are going is why people were complaining beforehand. But I also think that this game is so unique that I think that it's kind of fun to go to Ireland and like have the game being played there. And it's great exposure for both schools. I know that in an ideal world, you would want the game to be an Iowa State home game that K-State gets to just partner up with. But you don't always get that. And I think that that's kind of part of how this goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's you would like it to be a little bit more K-State dominated, and then, but also like to the point of what we've seen discussed about people not liking the game being moved. We know what the K-State schedule looks like this year, and it's the fact that the Iowa State game was supposed to be in Manhattan. So what you're actually getting this season is only six home games. And so then you'll play five on the road, the one neutral and everything. So people don't like that already because you had to give up the home game here. And then I think the other part of the problem has been, and this would be kind of fascinating, you know, we'll probably get to talk to Gene Taylor at Media Day again and really dive deeper into, as we get closer to this game, some of the semantics of it. But I think if this was K-State giving up a home game with UCF, I don't think anybody cares as much. I think it's like, oh, this is going to be fun. Yeah, hey, it would have been nice to have that seventh home game. But it's Iowa State, and you look at it and you say, okay, the Kleiman Campbell matchups, it's 2-4, K-State trailing in that department right now. And why would you reward somebody that you kind of view as your rival as getting away free from playing at Bill Snyder Family Stadium? And you get to go over there, and now it's going to be a 50-50 split. That I see why that would still be an issue for a lot of people and why there'd be some frustration.
No, I definitely see both sides of the coin here. Like, I see K-State's side of, in this world, the if you can maximize the viewership and the money, you have to do that. But I also understand, like, the fan angst, because, I mean, if Ireland wasn't being totally paid for, I would probably be pretty pissed about it, too. But we get to go, so I'm like, yeah, sure. So it's
well,
it's a trip out of the country for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I just it's I look at it from the standpoint of not just how like the fans will feel about it, and we know how they feel. I mean, I was the one that I hated the way that K-State. I thought they got worked over when they scheduled the basketball series with Wichita State. Like the fact that you're going to play two games in Wichita, only one in Manhattan, one in Kansas City, and then it ended up getting canceled because of COVID, but they were going to play the charity exhibition in Wichita as well. It's like, what happened there? Like K-State, I think the K-State-Wichita State series should continue, but K-State should have the cachet to say, hey, look, we're going to do this sucker. Let's do it, you know, lock in 5 years. Two of them are going to be in Manhattan, one of them in Kansas City. We'll play one on campus at Coke Arena, and we'll play the other one at Intrust Bank downtown in Wichita. And I think that's how it should be done. The fact that Wichita State essentially made it out of that game or that series better than K-State did, that's a little maddening. And I think that's the same type of thing here where you look at it and it's you're letting Iowa State kind of get off easy with it. And you look at K-State as a team, this is a game where I think the majority of fans' sentiment would probably be that this is K-State setting themselves up for a loss to Iowa State, because there's already this notion that it's just some overwhelming dominance that Matt Campbell has over Chris Klieman. Yeah, he's 4-2 against him. One of those is the COVID year where K-State had like 40 guys that were breathing that were able to play, and not, you know, 20 of them were probably actually good. So I think that's a little bit overstated, but you know, this team has struggled in some of these games that are set up like this, but you can also point and say they took care of business against Stanford, an inferior team, when they went to Arlington to start the season in 2021. Chris Klieman, his third game ever at K-State, was on the road in SEC country. He handled that. So it's there's really no science to it, but it does feel like the general notion would be that this is K-State asking themselves to lose this game, essentially. And I mean, do you think they're equipped to handle all the, there's going to be the travel aspect of it, and then there's going to be a lot of pomp and circumstance that goes into it once you get over there. Then you actually have to play the game, and is this team going to be ready, not even week one, but week zero, to play a conference opponent, a rival, and a team that, while they lose a decent amount of their production that made them good, they bring back their quarterback for a third year as a starter. We know Matt Campbell is probably one of the top five or six coaches in the Big 12. And K-State has some questions of their own. Once again, a new play caller. You're breaking in new pieces in all these different spots. The offensive line is going to be a total reset. Like, where do you think K-State will be at here, and how prepared will they be to actually win this game?
I think they'll be pretty prepared. And I mean, you hit on the K-State side, but Iowa State's also losing 2 1,000-yard receivers. They're also losing some guys in the trenches. I wouldn't expect this to be a pretty game because it's week zero, because it's in a foreign country, because there's so many pieces, especially along both lines, that are gone. I don't think that you can necessarily expect this to be like both teams come out and play at where we expect them to be the rest of the season. But I think that K-State will be ready to play as much as they can be. And I think that Iowa State will be too. But like I said, like there's just so many new pieces on both sides. I think that's what makes this game even more fascinating, is knowing what both teams are going to be losing beforehand. And now you're kicking off a week earlier than everybody else. You're in a foreign country. You're breaking in all these new pieces. what is that going to look like for both sides? And I think whoever prepares better is going to end up winning because of that. The other thing that I would say that I think that is why K-State's going to be ready to be prepared. Look at what K-State has done under Chris Klieman in week one. I wouldn't expect that to be any different in a week zero setting, because I know that a lot of what Chris Klieman has done in week one has been against FCS schools. Matt Campbell has been kind of the same way, but Matt Campbell in week one is typically kind of a little bit slow out of the gates and has a little bit of the old Bill Snyder in him, where especially 2.0, where they just try not to show a ton week one and just do enough to win. So they play kind of sloppy kind of games with FCS schools. I think this past year they only won 21-3 against South Dakota, who wasn't a world-beating FCS team. So you kind of look at that as like, okay, Matt Campbell has been kind of slow out of the gates to start week one. Chris Klieman teams have dominated FCS schools from the beginning of him arriving at K-State. So it's kind of fascinating there, because I think that it really is going to be kind of a coin flip. I know that there's already a spread out, but I think that the spread will be closer to a pick at kickoff than not.
Yeah, it's a good point about how the teams have started, because you look at, I mean, Iowa State last year, it really took them three halves to wake up, because they looked dead in the water in that first half against Iowa, and then they were able to come back and win and really do a lot of it in the second half. And it's good perspective, too, just on a general outlook for K-State. I mean, think about last year. The UT Martin game kind of felt gross and underwhelming, and K-State still blasted them, handled them pretty easily. And you look around at how other teams have fared against FCS schools to start their season, they are a little bit more dogfighty or ugly and gross. And I think the nature of this game will probably be that, where it will probably look a little sloppy. I think when you get two teams that are on similar footing to start the season against each other, and there's so much on the line, and then you factor in the fact that the weather, it seems like it's always raining and overcast for this game. Like there's probably going to be some sloppiness to it. It's going to be a grind. And what we've seen is that the only game that's kind of been like that for these two teams, Chris Klieman and K-State did win in Ames in 2022 when they beat Iowa State 10-9. So they found a way, and we'll see how that goes. But I just, I really wonder with this team, because we saw really that last month of the season last year, they had a lot of reason to be up and ready to go for those games, and they didn't do it against Houston. Then they didn't do it against Arizona State, and you know, Iowa State, they were competitive in the Iowa State game, but they just, too many things went wrong early for them. And this team, this specific team with the makeup they have, has to prove that they can be better getting out of the gates. Now, some people might say, I think that is possible because Matt Wells is going to be the offensive coordinator now. Or you would hope that over the course of the offseason, any of the flaws that Avery Johnson had that contributed to those three losses in November have been fixed. But the offensive line is going to be a significant thing going into the season next year on how do those guys work together. I don't know that we're as much worried about their talent. I think there's a lot of options that you can circle into the lineup if you need to, but how are they going to work together? And then you've got Jace Brown, the tight ends remain the same, and people I think should feel good about what Dylan Edwards and Joe Jackson did in the Rate Bowl. But
yeah, if you look at both offenses, I think K-State's in a better spot because they have more proven playmakers right now than Iowa State does.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the other side of this is, you know, we look, K-State, obviously the concern might be you're going to have to learn how to live life without Jacob Parrish. So the secondary was already a little concerning, mainly at corner last year. I think the safeties came around. Some guys didn't play their best, but I think you'll feel okay there. But corner is a concern spot, but seems like things are going well early enough for Jaden Rowe. But we still, as you talked, spring ball is so late this year, like we're not going to have any real indication on that. And as we know, we don't really know anything about these guys until the games actually start getting played, because we thought this K-State basketball team was going to be in the NCAA tournament no problem this year. And now we're, you know, going to see them sweat out not finishing below 500 overall. But Iowa State, on the other side of things, they lose their top two receivers, two 1,000-yard receivers that Rocco Becht had at his disposal and, like, wasn't overwhelmingly good with his numbers last year. Like, it was, he wasn't bad. I don't want anybody to think that. But he and Avery Johnson both had relatively pedestrian years last year for quarterbacks in terms of throwing the football. And now you take away two really, really good players there. Iowa State's going to be hurting in the production department a lot more than K-State. And I think you would just kind of assume that K-State is going to be able to take a lot of the key parts from last year that they've retained, and those guys should take another step forward, Avery Johnson being one of them. Jace Brown has continued. We've seen it year one, year two. Like, he gets better and better. He had an awesome game against Iowa State last year. He made big plays when you needed him to, not just against ISU, but also against Colorado. So you give the advantage to K-State still. I think they should win. Like, if we're playing this game on paper, K-State should win. But we know that this game is getting played in Ireland and all these other things. And there's some concern there about how this team has handled certain situations that you would think they'd be ready for, but then they're not. But I will say this, like, as you pointed out, like, there's probably some motivation there to make sure that doesn't happen. And I don't know if it's just me being an idiot, but I do feel more confident in this offense with Matt Wells as the offensive coordinator than Connor Riley. And that's not a shot at Connor Riley, or meant to be, but it's just, I think that Matt Wells is better suited for that role.
I'll take a page out of our friend KSU_fans playbook and say that no matter who the offensive coordinator was going to be, it was probably going to look better because this is the second year of Avery Johnson starting. So you're kind of assuming that you're going to get a little bit of growth. So doing a little bit more digging on what Iowa State might look like. I mean, Chase Sowell from East Carolina is probably one of their best transfer commits. He was a pretty productive player at East Carolina, had 678 yards and 3 touchdowns. And it's tall, 6'4". And then Xavier Townsend will probably be in that other mix for that other receiver. And he kind of does it all and did it all at UCF. What's interesting about Townsend is that we didn't really see him play a whole lot last year at UCF because after 4 games, he decided to just redshirt and transfer. So we haven't really seen him a lot. But I think that playmaking is probably more towards K-State. Defense is kind of a toss-up because Iowa State loses a lot on defense. K-State has lost a lot on defense. So I would lean this to be maybe a little bit more high-scoring, even though there isn't as many proven weapons on the Iowa State side of the ball on offense, because I think that this just feels like a game that the offenses are just going to be a little bit ahead because you have so many new pieces on defense. And I think that it's easier to add in new pieces on offense and get a flow and a rhythm than defensively.
Yeah. And one other thing that I would point out, we talk about the weather situation because that's going to be such a big deal. It would seemingly insinuate that running the football would be more important in this game. And K-State last year had one of the better run defenses in the country. And I know that some people will look at what took place last season in Ames and think, oh, well, I don't know. Iowa State still had, you know, a pretty good day running the football against them. Yeah, those were anchored by two big runs that were kind of backbreakers. But I think that Iowa State still has a running back problem. That they're not totally fixed there. That will be an issue. You think K-State will have that cleaned up and ready to go? And throwing the ball may not be as easy. And I don't know that you're going to necessarily need to do that in this game. So I think that there's enough where K-State should have the edge. I think overall next year, they, by the time we get to the end of the season, they should be the better team, just based on what they have going on and the knowns that we see them with and their portal haul. I think you would give the edge to K-State over Iowa State in that regard. But as we've seen, kind of the deal with Iowa State is when you think it may not be one of their better teams, they turn out A-okay. And we know that you're not going to go over there with K-State and just see a bad Iowa State team. I don't think that is totally possible anymore under Matt Campbell. Even the 2022 team that was not good, they were in so many of those games. Like they could have beaten K-State at home. They could have beaten Texas on the road. Like they had so many opportunities. They probably win those games if Hunter Deckers isn't their quarterback. And not because of him getting caught up in the gambling thing, just because I don't think he's a very good quarterback. So that was not a gambling insinuation there. But it's going to be fascinating to see how this game looks. But so many other interesting parts of it, the travel aspect, obviously, what the fan dynamic's going to be like there. I think once everybody is over there, it'll be exciting. I think everybody that is still here stateside watching, everybody's going to be excited that the very next college football game that you watch is going to be K-State, Iowa State. Like you are going to get to be a part of it. And when you wake up week zero, it's not just like, oh yeah, hey, this is nice. Football's on. It's like, I get to watch my school play football today and I don't have to wait another week. And then, you know, you kind of get some nice time baked in later in the season where K-State gets an extra bye week and you'll have those days where you go, man, I can just enjoy the games. I don't have to worry about my team playing. But there are plenty of things to discuss as we get closer to the game. But I just kind of wanted to take a look at it here and honor that we're about 6 months out from it, a little under it now. And so the next time you see the Cats hit the gridiron in Dublin, Ireland this August, it will be in the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Wildcat Nation, you can dominate Iowa State in the Battle of the Fans and turn Dublin purple. You can do your part by purchasing single-game tickets between now and February 28th, so only 2 days left, at kstatesports.com, or you can lock in official travel or hospitality packages at cats2ireland.com. Then you can check out cats2ireland.com each Tuesday at noon to see who's leading in the Battle of the Fans. So that's a nice little option for everybody if you're trying to keep track of, hey, how's this going? Where's K-State sitting at right now? Get in there, see where it's going, and try to at least, you know, catch up to Iowa State. 50-50 split, that'd be nice for everybody. Let's talk a little basketball, Drew. I know you're excited. Ireland fun fact. How dare I forget that?
I have a great fun fact that works as a segue.
Perfect.
So we're about to talk basketball.
Oh, we're going to talk about Knights?
So we're talking about basketball. Moby Ikegaruka from Galway, Ireland. There has been one Irish NBA player. Can you name the Irish NBA player?
How long ago did he play?
Drafted in 1997.
How many years did he play?
Let me check that right now. This is going to be a tough one for you. I can't lie.
I'm showing my hands. So people know I won't Google this.
He did go undrafted, but played in the NBA from 2002 and played on the Magic. And then played for the Suns from 2005 to 2007.
So 97 to 2002, he was with the Magic?
2002 to 2003, he was with the Magic because he went undrafted and played overseas. And then 05 to 07, he played for the Suns.
Okay, and I imagine he only averaged like 1.3 points per game or something?
3.7.
Okay, was it a name that you had heard of? You just didn't know he was from Ireland when you first?
No, never heard of this guy. That's why I said he got no shot. He actually started 8 games for the Magic in 02.
Okay, well.
Every year that he was in the NBA outside of 05, he was in the playoffs and played.
And his last year in the NBA was 07?
Yeah.
That's the part that could maybe give me a chance because 07, like, that's when I start to remember. I have a lot of my sports memories, and Other than the Mavs.
Phoenix Suns.
Well, I was going to say, other than the Mavs, I think the two teams that I like saw or played with the most were the Suns and the Rockets. Because I loved Yao Ming, and the Suns, I just, something about them, you know, I like the uniforms and everything. The purple and orange is kind of fun. The old orange PHX jerseys I really liked. I don't know that I have any idea though on this one. When you say it, maybe y'all.
This guy was a center, 6'11", 250, went to Auburn. Pat Burke.
Never heard of him. The only center from a European country for the Suns that I know is the Polish Hammer, Marcin Gortat. So,
Moby looking to be the second NBA player from Ireland.
Yeah, that probably won't happen, but everybody should have dreams. Let's talk about K-State UCF tonight. I'm sure some people are like, no, please do not. The Knights are 4.5-point favorites. Game tips off at 6 o'clock on ESPN+. The Wildcats' first trip to Edition Financial Arena as a Big 12 matchup with K-State and UCF. K-State dominated UCF to start Big 12 play last year in Bramlage, kind of surprisingly. This is a little bit of a different situation, though, because we know that K-State is in a spot where they're shorthanded, no Coleman Hawkins. And they didn't look particularly good or engaged at times in that game against Arizona State. I was going to use this for one of the daily questions, but I haven't gotten to doing that yet. There will be one tomorrow. We've had some things go on that have not been enjoyable for me to come to grips with in the Voth household. Namely, we had a vet visit yesterday. It was not the most fun for me. So that was a great time. But I promise there will be a video tomorrow. But one of the questions that got asked was by Peeves, who has some good basketball thoughts from time to time, a lot of the time. He was asking, you know, there was some complaints about the five that were on the floor that started the game against Arizona State, or how the rotation looked. Would you run back the same starting five tonight against UCF, or are you trying something different if you're Jerome Tang?
That's a tough question, because if you don't start that five, are you starting Moby? Like, I guess that would probably make the most sense, would be to start Moby in this lineup, because then you still have CJ Jones that can come in off the bench. Because if you don't, then you don't have, I guess you only have David Castillo as your guard depth for the entire bench. I mean, I think I would just run it back, but if they wanted to start a movie, I think it would be really fun, because we're at the point of the season where I just want the most fun to happen, and like a movie start would be kind of electric.
That's a good way to put it. We're kind of in the whose line is it anyway stage of the season, where, you know, everything's made up and the points don't matter. Yeah, there are going to be points on the scoreboard that give you a win or a loss, but they don't really matter for what's going on this season. I look at it in kind of the same fashion. I just don't know what you do differently to try and kind of benefit you, because if you go and look at how K-State did things against Arizona State, it's not like they played a ton of guys in that game. They ended up with, only 8 guys got minutes in the game. And I don't think anybody wants to see Ugana and Yinso start or really play that much right now. And like David Castillo isn't going to start because, I mean, Doug McDaniel's got to be out there. Brendan Hosen's got to be out there. Max Jones has to be out there. There's no doubt about it. 3 of your 4 best players available at this point in time. And then we know, you know, David Gasson is probably your best player. So it really comes down to that last spot. And options-wise, you basically just have to say to yourself, is it CJ or is it Moby? And I don't know that CJ was the problem for why things didn't look good. At least, you know, like the starting five wasn't overwhelmingly an issue in that game to me. Because K-State, you know, I get people didn't like seeing Arizona State go on that run, but also there wasn't a stoppage. The game wasn't out of control. So like Jerome Tang probably didn't feel the need to burn a timeout early to change much. They're really limited now on what they can change because, you know, Coleman Hawkins isn't there. You don't have a ton of depth. I mean, the guys that they're playing for depth right now, they haven't wanted to play at times over the last 3 weeks. David Castillo wasn't playing that much. Ugonna Anyinso was not playing that much. Like, they're just in a spot that they're kind of handcuffed right now. And again, that's not taking the blame off of them because they made this roster and you have to be prepared for when somebody might go down. But the reality of the situation right now is that they don't really have many other options.
No, like, that's why, like, I pushed back pretty hard on, like, why did they not take a timeout earlier and sub out guys? Like, who do you want to come in right now? And then, like, I went through the play-by-play of, like, what was going on. When was KC going to call timeout to make a sub? It was 9-6. Then Arizona State made a 3. And then it was 12-6. And then you got the media timeout, and it was still 12-6. So I just have the issues with that. Like, and we've been to the people that have harped the most on timeouts not being called at the right time, subs being kind of weird. There aren't a lot of guys right now that are left that K-State can really play. So that just kind of is what it is. And you hope that they play well tonight in a game that I think will probably be kind of gross because UCF, I thought, had kind of given up on the season a little bit. But then they beat Utah, who might have given up more because I have a feeling, and this is my tinfoil hat conspiracy, that Craig Smith may have been let go even though they'd won the last two games. Like, that's the only reason I can think of that they would beat KU and K-State back-to-back and then look so flat against UCF, who had lost every game in February up until then. So Craig Smith may have been let go beforehand. Or
yeah. And no, hey,
something was weird there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's true. Or it's just the fact that K-State and KU are deeply flawed teams right now that we're on the road and Utah has been pretty stinky away from home. Road games for Utah this season. They lost by 25 at Baylor. They lost by 23 at Iowa State. They lost by 34 at Houston. They lost by 9 at Oklahoma State, by 11 at West Virginia, by 10 at Cincinnati, and by 4 at UCF. They play at Arizona tonight. Good luck, Utah and you know, Josh Eilert.
By the way, again, sneaky big game if you want to get that bye.
Yep.
The standings are so jumbled up from 7 to 12 that there is kind of a lot that could go on there.
Yeah, so if you just kind of look around tonight at things that might happen, so we'll I'll just kind of go through this and do it how we think it might play out. We probably think BYU beats Arizona State tonight. We think Arizona will beat Utah. If K-State wins tonight, there is this jumbled mess of teams at 8-9. TCU, Baylor, K-State, West Virginia would all be 8-9. And then you could even, if Utah were to pull off the win somehow, I don't think that would happen, there would then be another team thrown into that mix of 8-9 teams. I'm, again, doubtful that that takes place, but you're going to have the opportunity there. And with all those teams at 8-9, these final games could really dictate on what happens because nobody in that group is like two of these teams are going to get a single bye in the Big 12 tournament that are in this mix right now. So that is significant for what we've talked about all season long and how that ends up working out. But
I'm getting kind of off the rails here looking at the standings. And I know that we are probably going to talk a little bit on Friday about the Big 12 slate this weekend. I'm going to get out ahead, and I'm going to say Oklahoma State beats Baylor. Mark it down.
Love it. Baylor does look like trash right now. Confirmed.
One of those teams is actually playing pretty decent basketball right now, and it's not the team that's going to be in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. Real quick, I want to go back to kind of the lineup thing and just say this, like the number one thing that K-State has to do better is just shoot the basketball. They were 19% from three against Arizona State. And if you look at the first half, they were 2 of 10, and I thought they got really good looks throughout there. It just guys like Max Jones and Doug McDaniel have to be better about making the looks they get. And then again, I'll go back to where this falls on the coaches. Brendan Hazen cannot be out on the floor and you get to the first media timeout and him not have taken a single shot. You have to get looks for him. There's only one reason why Brendan Hazen should ever be on a basketball court, and it's to shoot a three. And it is a failure by the coaches or maybe his teammates, but either way, the coaches need to kind of dictate this better, that Brendan Hazen needs to get a good look from three at some point in the first 4+ minutes of the game. Before we go to that first TV timeout, Brendan Hazen needs a look. And we've seen that continue to be a trend in these games where K-State struggles is they don't find a way. And they should have known based on how he played at Arizona State that, and a lot of these teams look at it now, Brendan Hazen is kind of one of the keys to the K-State offense in this run that they were on. He had a really good stretch there where he was making the shots. And we also know the other stuff that he was doing well, elevated from his other points this season. So that's probably the number one thing I'll be watching for tonight is you can kind of tell how this game is going to go if Brendan Hazen is able to get a good look early in the game or not. Because people, I think, sometimes have unfairly place blame on Brendan Hazen for some of the shots he's taken this season. Like, well, that's a terrible shot. Well, he kind of has to take some of the terrible shots because his team isn't getting many of the good ones, and you need him to take those. And also, yeah, he ends up with the ball sometimes, it seems like, in unforgivable positions that his teams put him in. So I don't think it's all on him for some of the bad shots. Now, there are times where it's like, let's have a little awareness there, not pop that one right now. But you don't have many choices when you're the shooter and you can't get good looks.
Yeah, they got to do a better job getting Brendan Hazen good looks. I remember one that they ran a set play for him, and he ended up taking a fadeaway three that just had no shot in the world to go in.
Yeah, and that's the other problem that you run into, too, real quick. It's just like when you get into that position, you think, oh, this is the one for me. I got to do this because you have no confidence that you're going to get it at any other point throughout the game. But, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say the other key to me for this game for K-State, if they want to win the game, is you got to get good Max Jones again. Out of all the people that have played in the last handful of games, I mean, we pointed out David Gasson wasn't very good on the Utah road trip. Obviously, Coleman Hawkins wasn't very good on the Utah road trip. Max Jones hasn't been good now for the last three games, so you probably need good Max Jones. And it's a home game for Max Jones, so you'd expect him to kind of play well. Remember, way back at Big 12 basketball media days, this is the one game Max Jones was really looking forward to.
It's a good point. I had forgotten about that, mainly because I have not been looking forward to this game. I actually kind of was, you know, when my brother was working down in Florida. And then he decided to exchange a job in Florida for a job in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So he left last week. Terrible timing, or I'd probably be down in Florida with him right now. But I will say this. Size-wise, you look at the next couple of matchups for K-State, at least size in this one, and then matchup and fit in the next one against Colorado. UCF isn't an overwhelmingly large team in terms of what they're going to put on the floor a majority of the time. They are going to have that option, though, where they could go a little bit bigger. And as we saw Arizona State try, they might think about doing that here. A guy like Benny Williams might see some more time than what he had been accustomed to, and they might load up with him out there because he can be a little bit bigger. So that might change how K-State needs to go. Maybe you need, you know, this is probably a Uganda and Yenso game. And I said I wouldn't change anything with the starting lineup. I think if things go poorly here, you've got nothing to lose when you play against Colorado on Sunday. I would throw Moby in there for energy to try and get this thing fired up. And then I also think just based on what we've seen at times this year from a guy like Bhangat Datt at Colorado. Like, he's a pretty bouncy, athletic guy. You just have Moby try and go around and match his athleticism, but we'll see how it ends up working out for K-State. I imagine we see the same starting five tonight that we did against Arizona State. They just got to make shots, and if they do that, they get off to a better start, and they probably don't feel the need to change how they did things in the second half. Like, I think there was a lot of emphasis on the wrong things from reaction after this game, from not just fans, but, like, I think Jerome Tang in some ways, that the first half wasn't really that much of a problem. It was seriously just, well, K-State was down six at halftime. Two of those were threes that Jaden Quaintance made. I guarantee you, Jaden Quaintance is not making another three the rest of the season. And K-State got good looks that just didn't fall for guys that have shot it better over the last 4 weeks in Max Jones and Doug McDaniel. You didn't get the looks for Brennan Hausen. If you just make some shots in the first half, I think you're fine. And then I think Jerome Tang, you know, they kind of changed how they worked on offense in the second half. And yeah, it got David Gasson going, but it got nobody else going, and the offense looked way worse, and you fell behind. And then some people harped on defense and everything, and it's just like, you didn't even give up 70 points in the game to Arizona State. Defense was not the problem there. You got to get the offense figured out without Coleman Hawkins, because obviously he's been such a big part of it. But
my guess is people harp on the defense because they let some open looks go, but then yeah. Looks and Quaintance had only made 5 threes going in. Ali was 28%. Yeah. So you think of that and you're like, yeah, it probably doesn't look great because they're open looks, but those guys were open for a reason. Like that, yeah. K-State did the same thing against Iowa State, and it just worked out because the non-shooters didn't make the shots in Ames.
Yeah. I will say on the Amir Ali front, you go back and you look now at his last 5 games. He is, I'm doing math here real quick. This is fun to listen to. He was, 11, 14, he is 10 of 22 from 3 over the last 5 games. He's getting more looks from 3 during that stretch. He's doing a better job of shooting it there. I think his poor shooting was probably a little bit not who he was, throughout the different points of the season. So I would just put that out there to be aware. Like, I think that's a misstep by them to not do a little bit better of defending Ali. The Quaintance thing, I'm not going to fault anybody for looking at that guy, his numbers, and his shot and be like, we really need to get on him. And there were points in the second half where I thought actually K-State getting a little bit closer to him was a bad thing, because then he passed on taking some of those threes that I thought he would have and instead tried to drive and got K-State into a much more dangerous situation. So we'll see how that ends up playing out and moving forward. But do you have a pick for tonight? I did pick in preview. I'm probably an idiot, and I took K-State. I for some reason, I think they can get it figured out. I think UCF, obviously, they've got their problems too. That's what some people forget sometimes is, yeah, well, K-State is not playing well right now. There are other teams that suck in this league, and UCF is one of them. I'd feel better about what K-State has than what UCF has on a night-to-night basis still. So I think K-State wins. I think I probably 78-70 if they're going to win this game. I think K-State either wins this thing by a semi-comfortable margin or UCF wins.
Yeah, I'm also probably an idiot, but I'll have to go K-State 75-67.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll be back after the game tonight. We'll be wildly wrong about it. I'm 100% sure of that. And, yeah, we'll see. Everybody come back, react with us tonight after K-State, UCF. It'll finish up just after 8 o'clock down in Orlando. So we'll be here recapping it all. And if you want more KSO, you say, man, I only caught the basketball talk. Where was the football talk? You can go back, watch all of this on the YouTube or listen to the podcast that'll be up later today. You can also go to kstateonline.com, become a KSO member if you're not. Get your access to all the info that we provide, premium message boards, and a lot more. So sign up for K-State and your On3 membership at kstateonline.com. We will be back on Friday with a KSO show for you, talking about everything. Probably a big weekend preview because, again, we care about baseball right now. The Batcats win. We care about baseball. They don't. I'm probably going to gripe about it looking ugly, but it looked fun over the weekend down in Texas. They're back down there. They've got a big one this weekend, starting with LSU, the number two team in the country. So for Drew Galloway, I'm Mason Voth. We're out of here. Thanks for watching and listening to the KSO Show.